Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 14th of April, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news that you can use and share with your crews.
While you snooze.
While you snooze. Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook's founder, endured a rite of passage this week that other powerful executives have gone through before, a public grilling before Congress.
Not with a cushion, though.
Not with a cushion?
Yeah. Well, yeah. He had to get that cushion.
Right. Oh, that. Yes. To sit on. Yes. Over 2 days, nearly 100 lawmakers in the House and Senate interrogated Zuckerberg about the company's handling of user information. He faced almost 600 questions, including whether the company should be more heavily regulated, whether it intentionally censors conservative content, and how much Russians may have meddled with America's democratic process through the social network. The hearings came in the wake of revelations that the political consulting firm Cambridge Analytica improperly harvested data of up to 87 million Facebook users. Zuckerberg spent most of Monday visiting with top lawmakers he would later face in the hearings, mounting an apology tour of sorts. He tried to impress upon them that he understood where his company had failed and outlined the work that Facebook was doing to avoid similar issues in the future. Facebook made a series of announcements that it said would help people take better control of their information. It cut off advertisers' access to information from third-party data brokers, which had allowed marketers to increasingly target users on the social network. The company also promoted ways for people to download and review their data. Privacy and data practices weren't the only things that drew scrutiny. Some of Facebook's most devoted users publicly criticized the social network for how they said it profited off unpaid publishers. And organizations working in Myanmar,
yeah,
rebuked Facebook for not doing enough to stop hate speech, which has incited violence in that country. The organizers received a personal response from Mr. Zuckerberg, saying, perhaps unexpectedly, sorry. The Senate hearings turned out to be a pointed gripe session. Senator Richard Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, zeroed in on the central issue of the hearing, asking Mr. Zuckerberg whether he would be comfortable sharing aloud the name of the hotel where he stayed on Monday night, or whether he would be comfortable sharing the names of the people he had messaged this week. No, I would probably not choose to do that publicly here, Mr. Zuckerberg said. I think that may be what this is all about, Mr. Durbin said. Your right to privacy. The limits of your right to privacy and how much you give away in modern America in the name of, quote, connecting people around the world, unquote. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is still on Facebook. Your choices are, oh, yes, I love it, or just to keep in touch with a few friends, or none of your beeswax. So far, we've got 27 votes, and none of your beeswax is in the lead by a semi-decent margin. But, of course, I know you will have more to say. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff are the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item in the poll discussions is 14 April, 18, still on Facebook. And so far, we've got 8 posts. So things are popping over there. And then, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, I thought that was just so amusing, though, that, you know, they were going more and making a bigger deal on his second day of testifying about that he was sitting on a cushion, so he was a little bit higher. It's like, seriously?
Yep.
That's all you can focus on?
Yep.
One of the things that I sort of most noticed in the very little bit I watched was how clueless the members of the committee were in the questions they were asking.
Oh, yes.
Once one guy kept harping and harping about, so when I send messages in WhatsApp, you can read those messages and send them to advertisers. No, it's all encrypted. We can't get into any of those messages. But the advertisers can see everything I'm typing and send me ads on those things. No, it's encrypted. They cannot see anything. We get none of that data. Yeah, but. And finally, Mark said, if I understand what you're asking, the answer is no, they cannot see that data.
Yeah.
Look. In WhatsApp, but certainly in Facebook Messenger,
yes.
They can.
Yeah. Well, so I was a little impressed that he knew what WhatsApp was and apparently was using WhatsApp.
Right.
But a lot of them, like you said, a lot of them were like deers and staring at the headlights. They didn't have a clue other than, you know, probably most of them don't do most of the messaging or anything else. They've got an assistant that's doing it for them.
Right, staff. Right.
You it's know, all chauffeur driven for them. They don't have time for that.
Right. In spite of all that everyone has said about Facebook, people aren't leaving.
No.
People, not only that, but I have friends who have never seen a poll they wouldn't take.
Yeah.
You know, or you know, one of those, what's your elf name?
Oh, yeah, I got a few people, it's like they got to do all of those stupid things.
So, apparently, being a vegan is anti-Christian.
How did that happen?
On one of those polls I came through my feed. If you're practicing any of these, you're practicing witchcraft and it's anti-Christian.
Being, veganism?
Yeah. I have no idea.
Okay. Okay. I'm sure there's a perfectly legitimate reason. I just don't know what it is.
But it must be okay to keep kosher because that's in the Bible.
That's in the Bible. But you can't. Never mind.
You're not going to win that.
No, you're not going to win that one. But here's the thing. People, pay attention. If you're taking Facebook polls, you are giving away even more info. My favorite one so far is the one that says the last three digits of your phone number. They show you a dial, a number pad.
Yeah.
And it has like money, sex, love, blah, 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 blah. All right. And it says the last three digits of your phone number will be the three things you get this year.
Oh, geez.
So, you know, it's like money, sex, power, whatever the three things, right? Yeah. So people are going, oh, I get money, sex, power. Well, excuse me, you just gave away the last three digits of your phone number. Facebook already knows where you live, so they know your area code.
Yep.
They can take an awfully good guess at your exchange. So they are now 10 digits away from your phone number.
And they may already know your cell phone number because you do messaging.
Well, not only yes, and that's exactly right. And you do messaging, and if not, people will leave their phone numbers in Facebook, either in a private message, which isn't, we know that, or whatever. And I mean,
with all the breaches and everything else, especially like the credit company there. That leaked out so much information.
Experian,
thank you. And now they're pushing the big ads. Oh, you want to know if you've been, you know, taken over by the dark web?
Right.
And you should read, do you want to know if we screwed up and passed out your information? Come and let us check.
That's exactly right.
Well, and the answer I usually get from our customers, oh, I don't have anything they want to steal. Yes, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Even if you have bad credit, you have some credit.
Right.
You have the anonymity the bad guy wants, so it's not him breaking in somewhere else. It's you breaking in.
And they're going to come knocking on your door, not that person that stole it.
Right. And people don't understand that. They're not interested in your information. They're interested in your identity so that they can break into somewhere important.
Yeah.
And then the FBI comes looking for you.
Yeah, you, not them, because...
And then my other favorite is, well, I'm nobody. They're not going to find me. Pay attention. This is all being done algorithmically. It's being done by computers.
Yeah.
They don't care who you are. You're just more data.
Yep.
And they'll get you as much as they'll get anybody else.
And an identity that they can use to open up another credit card or anything else if they want to and deplete it. even if they get you, say, all your information, and they get you accepted, say, for a lousy, say, $2,000 credit card.
Right.
They'll have that drained in less 5 minutes.
Right. All even if it's not your credit card, you're still liable for that.
Yep.
And if they decide that they're going to break into a bank using your information, you're the one that the FBI is going to come after first.
Yep.
You know, and people don't get it. They think, oh, I'm safe because I'm nobody. No, you are. They don't care if you're nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving a talk this week at
somewhere.
Friends of the book sandwiched in for Friends of the Public Library, and the thing has the book is called World Without Mind by a guy named Franklin Fuller, and his basic deal is that algorithms are taking over. And it's at noon at the 12:15, I think it is, at the Bausch & Lomb building, Bausch & Lomb Library downtown. Book sandwiched in, and his basic deal is that algorithms are taking over, and they're mindless, and
they
so
don't
people
care.
Don't
yeah.
they don't care. They're not.
Nope.
There's no human looking at those data and saying, "Well, this guy's not important." It's a computer looking at
it's
that
numbers.
Data and saying, is that person vulnerable? Yes, then I want their information. It's there's no value to there's no value judgment there.
Right.
Oh, you're not a big deal. You're an equal deal to everybody else.
And they'll still, even if you're an equal deal, they'll still try to exploit it.
Right.
If they can, even, like I say, the minute chance that they could get enough information out of your so-called account that you have nothing to worry about, like I say, if they can get enough that they could open up credit cards or anything else, they won.
That's
they
exactly
won.
Right.
And now the argument is going to be on your behalf to dispute it and prove that you didn't do that.
Right.
You know, and I mean, well, I wouldn't. Well, you know what? Now you're guilty until proven innocent. Because,
right.
You know, that's the way it's going.
That's the way it's done.
Yeah.
And
because they had all the pertinent information, your social security number, your phone number, where you live, your kids' names or whatever.
Yep.
You know, they can get so much of that you think, oh, it's so cute when you fill out these stupid surveys and everything else. Yeah, you've just opened yourself right on open and let them drive right on through. You can
yep.
drive a semi through it.
Yep. And that's how they, you know, and that's how they do it. We need your middle initial. Well, guess what? Your elf name is the first letter of your first name, the first letter of your middle name, and the first letter of your last name. What? You just gave me your middle initial.
Yep.
Now I need your phone number. Well, you just gave me your phone number.
Or what month were you born in?
Right. And I need your birth date. So now I've got that information.
Boom.
Now I can open. Now I've got enough information to open an account as you.
Hey, because here's a bigger question to ask folks to yourself. All right. You're doing these so-called cute little games. Who wrote the games? Do you know their reputation?
Right.
How do you know it's not some scam artist over in Russia or some other country that created this, what you think is a cute little game to, you know, decide, like you said, your elf name or all this other stuff, but really it's just a way of gathering all this information on you.
Yep, and that's all they're doing. And it's in fact a huge business.
Yeah.
Why is it a huge business? Because they get bucket loads of money. And how do they get bucket loads of money? From you.
And here's the
that was one of the questions I saw that I hope everyone takes notice of. One of the congresspeople asked Zuckerberg, how do you make money on a free service? And his answer was very simple. We sell ads.
Yep.
Yes, that's how they make money. So everything they can do to give you more ads and to get more data from your ads is more money for them.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, of course, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. There's got to be a bunch of you huddling at home. Actually, they're all out doing stuff before the sleet hits.
Yeah.
Is what they're doing. This may be the Chromebook I buy. We'll see.
I saw the
next one. Yeah, Acer ushered in the Chromebook tablet era with its Chromebook Tab 10 slab last month, and HP wasted no time entering the new space. The company announced the Chromebook X2, a Chrome OS detachable with a keyboard and Wacom AES-style stylus that isn't meant to be confined to the classroom. While Acer's tablet is meant for education and commercial customers, HP's Chromebook X2 is made with regular customers in mind, particularly those who are attracted to the versatility and efficiency of Chrome OS. The Chromebook X2 specs immediately differentiated from Acer's device. It runs on a 7th generation Y-series Intel processor, 4 gig of RAM, and it supports up to 8 gig. 32 gig of storage that can be expanded to 256 gig through the micro SD slot. Designed with a similar size to HP's other X2 detachables, the Chromebook X2 has a 12.3-inch 2400 by 1600 IPS display that supports touch and pen input. It has a 5-megapixel wide vision camera on the front and a 13-megapixel rear-facing camera, which I don't know how necessary that actually is, but okay. It has 2 USB Type-C ports, in addition to the micro SD card slot and the standard audio in-out jack, and its 48 watt hour battery is estimated to last 10.5 hours on a single charge. Those higher end internals place the Chromebook X2 in a different category from Acer's education focused tablets, and that's exactly what HP wants. The company wants to appeal to users who are warming up to the idea of using Chrome OS as their primary PC operating system. While the Y-series processor makes the Chromebook X2 more powerful than a typical tablet or Chromebook laptop, it's also a good choice for striking a performance and battery life balance that Chrome OS users want. With the ability to run Chrome OS and Android apps, this is the kind of device HP hopes users have no qualms about taking with them wherever they go to complete all kinds of tasks in a speedy manner and without the worry the device will die on the midday. While you can use the Chromebook X2 as a tablet, it comes with a keyboard that HP designed to be sturdier than most detachable keyboard stands. The magnetic hinge attaches easily to the device and will roll slightly to prop up the keyboard when you have to use it in your laptop or on a table. HP claims this keyboard is easier to use on your lap because it has a thin layer of metal running through it, making it more rigid and stable than its competitors. There are plenty of reasons why Chrome OS excels in the education and budget PC markets. At $600, the Chromebook X2 is still fairly budget, but it's on the higher end of the Chrome OS devices available in terms of price. So are you tempted by the HP Chromebook X2? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
It's surprising at work. You know, the break room, I was talking to one gentleman, this was about a month ago, about the Chromebooks. So just this past week, a couple weeks ago, he came in and we were talking about it more. And some other folks were, listening. Now all of a sudden I'm getting barraged by these folks, especially this one gentleman. I happen to just overhear you guys talking about this, and I got a laptop that's, running Windows XP.
Yeah.
He goes, there's not much hope for that, is there? I go, as a doorstop, if you want to go ahead and get something that's real. Yeah, but my wife likes to do this. Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, but what about checking the bank account? Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, but the biggest thing is, the viruses and the spyware, it's such a pain in the butt trying to keep up with it. You don't worry about that.
Yeah, you don't get those with this.
He goes, are you sure about that? Yeah. All of a sudden, two other folks all of a sudden chimed in. Yeah, we've already been doing some research. We heard him talking about this, too. So I'm creating this group now that is looking at Chromebooks.
I'll tell you, this thing looks, the X2 looks really nice. The only thing I don't like is only a 12.3-inch display.
Yeah.
that's a little small, but I understand it because it's also you can pop it right off the keyboard and it becomes a tablet. Now it's a 12-inch tablet, which is actually a little large for a tablet.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand it's kind of a midway device.
Yeah, it's kind of in between, but, you know, let's see what it can do. And the other big thing is you're not paying for an operating system. And the best scenario, correct me if I'm wrong, I tried to, you know, explain it to folks there at Medical Motors, you know, because they're looking at buying some tablets too. I says, think of it as the old days. Back when you used to go sit at a terminal, you just turned it on, and boom, the program was there. You didn't have to worry about it. Your menu came up, and you weren't putting any disk or anything in it, right? Well, yeah. And I said, you did all your work. Yeah. I said, well, you can do the same with a Chromebook. It's just using the Chrome browser. You click it, turn it on, it's there. So, yeah, there's nothing that can get infected. So that's why, and you're not paying for an operating system.
Right.
Because eventually these folks that are running Windows 10 are going to have to pay for updates and everything else come Windows. Because Windows is not getting rich off of handing out all these free updates. There's going to come a point that they're going to say, all right, now we're going to start having to charge you for Windows.
They've already said that. It's going to be a subscription
service. And it's going to get closer because now with Chrome beating on the door of taking, you know, even beating them, and they've already taken over schools.
Right.
And, you know, it's so much easier and simpler. And as far as, you know, even as an administrator of a network, could, you know, for you, just think of those days that you were sitting there fighting with people's machines trying to figure out this or that. Well, if it was a Chromebook, just reset it.
All the data's on the cloud, so it's very easy to put a new OS on it and log back into your account.
Yeah.
And for those of you,
it makes the back
who...
end a little more important to make sure you're,
right,
as the administrator of the cloud.
Yeah, well, right, you can save a heck of a lot of money in repairs and everything else and people messing up their machines.
And for those of you with Chromebooks, I think we talked about this last week, but for those of you with Chromebooks, there is a utility in the store, in the web store, called the Chromebook Recovery Utility. It is from Google. Make sure you get the Google one. And it allows you to get and I said this before, they say 8 gig, but I put mine on a 4 gig and it worked, I don't know, on an SD card or a USB stick, and make a recovery disk for your Chromebook.
Right.
Now, most of the time you will not need it. But you know what? On my other Chromebook, I needed it. It came up one day and it said, can't find the operating system, can't even find enough of the operating system to download the operating system. Mm-hmm. And it was dead.
It's an electronic device. Right. Anything is possible to fail.
Right.
Nothing is foolproof.
Right.
Sorry.
Right. And so I turned it off, stuck the SD card in, turned it back on. It came up and said, oh, I see you've got a recovery disk. I'll just use it.
Mm-hmm.
Whoop, whoop, whoop. 5 minutes later, my machine was back running. 5 minutes after that, I logged in. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes after that, it had downloaded everything from the cloud. And I had all my apps back, all my utilities, everything was there.
See, that's the other key point folks have to understand. For the most part, if you try to get infected or anything else, things hang up, you can do what they call a factory reset.
Right.
And it puts it back to the day you bought it and took it out of the box. Any of the other apps or anything else that Nick's talking about that's down along the bottom, you have to redo those. So by doing that, you know, taking the precaution to back that all up.
Does Chrome remember you downloaded those and reinstalled
them
for you?
Yes, and that's nice. Just it. When I first brought it up after the recovery, it was a brand new Chromebook, never used before. It had the road and the background and all that other stuff. But I logged in with my username and password, and it started downloading all my stuff. So by the time it was done, I had all my apps back, all the stuff across the bottom was back, my background, everything else done. And it took a few minutes because it's coming off the web and that, you mm-hmm. know, it is what it is.
And you can use it when you're not connected to the internet for things like writing and whatnot.
Right.
So a lot of people worry about that. You have to be connected to the internet. Well, if you're using a web browser, yes, you have to be connected to the internet, just like you do on your current computer.
Right.
But, yeah, so don't let that hinder you. If you're just writing something or taking notes,
right.
You don't need to be connected to the internet.
I've written three books on the Chromebook, and most of the time I was in a place that wasn't connectable, that wasn't connected to the internet. It doesn't care.
Oh, that's one thing. I also told them about your books if they wanted to learn more
about.
Hey, it's just providing a good service that these folks, you know, can tap into and become a little bit better educated. So,
I appreciate that. Thank you. I do have three books up on the Kindle library. So if you have, and up on Amazon, they're ebooks. Then they're about Chromebooks, and I wrote them on the Chromebook. You can.
Wouldn't that be ironic if you wrote them on Windows?
Yeah, exactly. It would, because I don't own a Windows machine anymore. But yeah, so definitely, the Chromebooks are completely useful. I've sat at the beach, and written a book, and it's Chromebooks don't care. When I got home. It essentially, I opened it up and it turned itself on. I logged in and it said, "Oh, I'm back on the network. Let me upload all of this back to Google Docs."
Mm-hmm.
And boom, a half a minute later, it was all up there. My whole, all the stuff I'd written that day, now backed up on the web and perfect.
Yeah. Well, that's always a big question I get. You know, the folks are, well, what about doing this and use Google Docs. Yeah, but if you're just doing basic typing or spreadsheets of that, you're not into these complicated formulas and spreadsheets and all that. No, I just do simple stuff. Then do it on Google Docs, and it's all there. It's free storage, and even your photos.
I've got an article about some updates to Google Sheets, the spreadsheet version, and that'll be interesting for people too. It's gotten much more powerful. All right, we should go to the phones. Our first caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. I'm at Chromebook Recovery Utility.
Yeah.
Well, the friendly guys in the blue shirts put 16-gig USB sticks on sale for $4.99 this past week.
Yeah.
I went down and bought two of them for that price. And did a Google search on Chromebook Recovery, and it came right up and took me to the Google store to the right place. You put the stick in the Chromebook and did the recovery from the ran the utility, and it took maybe 3-4 minutes. Stop.
Yeah, I tell people five. So
yeah.
It was like really fast. Now I did look at a lot of the comments, and it was people trying to do the recovery after their Chromebook had bit the bullet, and now they're trying to create the recovery stick from a Windows machine.
Right,
and that seemed to not work as well.
It's tricky when you do it that way.
Yeah, but if you do it beforehand,
right,
it's kind of like make your backup now before it fails later.
Exactly.
You put the stick in the Chromebook, bring up that utility, it gives you the name of your computer, you type it in exactly as they give it to you, it comes back and says, yeah, I found that Chromebook, now you can do it. And you hit the go button, and it's done.
Yep. And it's exactly right, and it's so easy. The only thing. Well, okay. So here's the way the recovery utility works. Every Chromebook has a fairly unique identifier. Mine started with Falco something or other. And when you do it on a different machine, you have to know that information. Of course, if your Chromebook is dead, now you got a problem. But if you do it ahead of time, the utility comes up and says, oh, this Chromebook's ID is Falco, whatever it was, and you type that in. And it kind of porks me off that it doesn't type it in for you, but okay, that doesn't do that. So you have to actually, you see it above the line, above the input box, and you put it in the input box. And then you just wait a few minutes, and boom, it makes the disk. Then you label it, put it away. And don't touch it except in the event of your Chromebook dying. And you're done.
Yeah, well, in my case, the stick I was using was black. It's hard to write on it. So what I did was I grabbed a little plastic lunch bag.
Yep.
And put an index card in there and said, Chrome Recovery Utility for the name of the computer and or a model of the Chromebook, and then I put it in with all my computer stuff, and I know where it is.
Right. Mine, like I said, I did mine on an SD card, and so I just stuck a little piece of paper in the carrier with the SD card. All right. Thanks, Andy. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Tom from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
I don't use my printer that much, and I was having some problems with it. And I went back in to try to set it up under Windows 10 again. I logged in as administrator and went through all the settings and the devices and set it up. And then when I tried, I think the last thing it tells you is to put a test page.
Yeah.
I tried that. Nothing happened. I went and I opened up a small Word file, and I tried to print that, and I get a message that says printer is in error state.
Okay, what kind of printer is it?
It's a Canon inkjet.
Does it have a screen on it?
A screen? Oh, you mean like a digital screen?
Yeah, a little setup screen.
It's an i550. It's an older printer.
When was the last time you used it?
Probably before I installed Windows 10.
Which is,
How long ago?
What's that, maybe a year ago?
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems with inkjet printers is that it has a parallel port.
The printer, yeah.
Yes.
USB in parallel.
Right, right. So, but here's the problem. One of the issues with inkjet printers is if you don't use them, they clog up. They dry up and clog up.
Yeah, usually that has happened before, and it always gives me, I get a... on the screen, it'll tell me that such and such a one of the cartridges is empty or dry.
The other thing, though, have you checked to make sure that the other items in the queue have been cleared out?
As a matter of fact, when I tried to print those three things, I saw that afterwards there was two things in the queue, but they were the two things I assumed the test page and then the small Word file that I tried to print.
There, you have to make sure that, first I'd clear all that stuff out.
How do you clear out the queue?
Yeah, you can just select them all and say delete them in the queue. Now, the other thing that you want to check...
How do I access what's the queue, just under...
If you just click on the printer down in the lower right-hand corner, because it should be there showing you a little printer that you can click on, that's the queue.
Or in the printer control panel.
Yeah, in the printer control panel.
Hey.
The other thing that you also want to double-check is to make sure that that is your active printer. That it is the primary one, that it is active.
Right. The other thing you want to do is where did you get the driver for that printer?
Well, I assume when I tried to reset everything else up, it searched for the updated driver.
Well, that's a nice assumption, but it isn't necessarily true.
Next contestant.
What you need to do is make sure... See, one of the problems is if you already had a driver... that wasn't right. For example, if this was a Windows 7 machine that you upgraded to Windows 10, or with a year-old printer you had an old driver somewhere in your system, it may not be fully compatible with Windows 10.
And there is no Windows 10 driver for the Canon i550.
And there you go. So I'm not entirely sure what to tell you at this point.
The last driver they made was for Windows 7 in 2011.
Try selecting that.
Try selecting what?
Windows 7 driver, but guarantees on that because, again, you're using something that, a printer that is very old and they don't support anymore.
Okay. I probably have the disk for the driver, you know, when I bought the printer.
No, you want to see if they've got an updated one.
Yeah, download it directly from Canon.
Access it online?
You go right
directly from Canon.
Go to Canon's website and see for that printer what's the latest driver. Because the one you came with, you know, is probably old.
Okay.
And the newest one might get you closer to get it working, but no guarantees.
So just get the Canon website and then search for the a driver for that printer if they have one.
Right. There's also another thing you should do, and Steve's going to post the link on this.
I saw that for doing it from inside Windows, but I didn't see one for doing it on the printer itself.
Yeah, this is right here on the printer itself. You should perform a printhead cleaning.
Okay.
Oh, good point.
Because when I say that the printer gets clogged, I don't mean that the cartridges go bad. I mean that the printhead itself clogs up from dry ink on it.
And that would give you that error state message?
Well, that error state says something's wrong and we don't know what.
Okay. So, and how do I get to the printhead cleaning?
Well, we're putting a link up right now on soundbites.org on how to do that.
Especially when you push the buttons on the printer in the right order.
Yeah, there's a bunch of printer. There's a bunch of buttons right at the front, and you have to print. Look at the thing. You punch them in the right order and blah, blah, blah.
Might be giving them, like you said, Nick, a false positive.
How about a paper
that it
out?
It hasn't been, you know, even though he's wiped it off, the machine inside memory thinks that it's still clogged.
Yeah.
So by running that test, like you said, might clear that out.
And it might, in fact, be clogged internally.
Either or. Yeah.
You need to do something to clean that out. And what that will do its best, at least, to it takes about a minute. Sometimes you end up with a very splotchy piece of paper in there, but go ahead and do that. And then you can tell whether or not the nozzles were clogged and whether that, resolved it.
Yeah. That's one of the problems with a printer that doesn't have its own screen is you can't see what the error is. It may be no paper. It may be paper jam. It may be the door's open.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see.
Yep.
Or buy a new printer.
Buy a new printer, yeah.
Yep.
Or indeed buy a new printer,
thank you very much for your help. I appreciate it.
Yep. All right, good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah, oftentimes with stuff like that, there's a program in the computer that you open up to tell you what the message is. But if he can't get the Canon software installed, then he can't open that up to see what the message is.
Right. Yeah, I've got an HP printer. I got to either decide to replace or try to get it fixed. Because
I've got a Brother's printer that I love.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an all-in-one that Sandy had, you know, and it was working fine. Then all of a sudden, one day, and it keeps saying that there's a paper jam or anything else. And I went through everything, tried to figure it all out, and it's not clearing it out.
One of the sensors is probably malfunctioning and it thinks there's a jam.
Yep. I've got a Brother all-in-one, and it's a workhorse, man. Yeah. We use it constantly.
And the problem is the printers are so cheap now that they're not worth putting any money into.
Yeah, I got to find a place to even work at.
ABC HP's. Electronics in East Rochester.
ABC's?
Yeah.
It's still there?
Yep. They moved. They're down Dispatch Drive now, I think.
Okay. I'll have to check that.
Yeah, they do printer repair, but
yeah, I use
they're
them.
The first to tell you, you know, here's our hourly rate. Here's what a new printer costs. So you're sure?
Decades ago, I used to recommend taking people to, you know, laser printers and everything else.
Nowadays, they're so cheap. Even color laser printers. Yeah. Are ridiculously comparatively. I mean, they used to be $10,000.
Yeah. They're on Lincoln Parkway now. That's right. Okay. I knew they moved.
I know where they are. Yeah. That's one scary thing though, with this job I got now. Learning more streets.
Oh yeah, I'm
Google, sure. Backways.
Google says they're permanently closed. Oh, when did that happen?
What?
Yeah.
What you say?
Oh well. Too bad. They were a nice company.
Yeah, they were
a nice company. All right, let me read this. I think I got time to read one more. I would talk about Google Sheets. Google has rolled out updates to Sheets, including the ability to record macros, part of the company's plan to appeal to more business users with its G Suite cloud product portfolio. Macro recording provides a way to automate repetitive tasks within the G Suite spreadsheet tool, potentially saving users hours of duplicated effort. The macro recorder lets users record actions within Sheets and then play them back without having to write code. Once recorded, a macro is automatically converted into an app's script, a Google scripting language derived from JavaScript. This can be later edited to update the macro rather than forcing users users to re-record it completely. It is also possible to write custom app script functions and import them as new macros, Google said. It's also possible to... I almost dropped the paper and I picked it up again and just started reading the same paragraph. We want to help companies automate work by approaching macros differently. Cloud first, said G Suite product manager Ryan Weber in a blog post on Wednesday. As Sheets macros are built for cloud-based files, users can run macros while others are working in a sheet without interruption. The Sheets update comes as Google aims to attract more business users to its productivity suite with new features and products such as the recently launched Google Hangouts Chat. G Suite now has more than 3 million paying customers, although, of course, Google lags far behind its main rival, Microsoft Office 365, which boasts over 120 million active monthly users, which is a lot. Recent updates to G Suite has positioned Google as a serious contender in the Office Suite and collaboration markets. While Microsoft still owns the market, Google is effectively chipping at the market share bit by bit. Google's focus on user experience and functionality improvements such as the Sheet update play well with both regular and power users. This should be a concern for Office 365, which is focused on the regular users first. Other features added to Sheets this week include the ability to add printing page breaks, custom paper sizes, more options for row and column grouping. It's also possible to add checkboxes in cells and to group data by time frame, such as week, month, or year in pivot tables. The new features build on Google's recent enhancements to Sheets, particularly involving pivot tables. Excuse me. In December, Sheets gained new AI and machine learning capabilities, simplifying the management of large data sets. For example, users can ask Sheets questions using natural language and receive suggestions for which type of pivot table to use. That, according to Google, should make the tool simpler to use for non-technical business users. In related news, detail emerged about Google's planned redesign of its Gmail web interface. Which is kind of exciting. According to several reports on Thursday, an email sent to G Suite administrators detailed a range of new features that will become available as part of an early adopter program, including the addition of the smart reply function already present in the mobile version of the application, the ability to snooze emails for hours or days, and access to other G Suite apps as calendar from within Gmail. And there's another thing they're trying to do, which is self-destruct. I forget what they call it. But you can send somebody a Gmail email that they cannot forward or print or save, which is pretty cool. You can probably screenshot it. But I don't know how you stop that. Yeah. But you can't forward it. You can't save it. You can't print it. It just won't do it. At any rate, are you a heavy spreadsheet user? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Do you know what a pivot table is? Then you need this feature.
That's exactly right. But that's exactly right.
But the other point you brought up, you know, and Microsoft should be worried, because think of, WordPerfect and all that. You know, they were a company that was lodged into, like,
everywhere.
That was the thing. And Microsoft came in, and they slowly ate away at it, and they won over. Now, with Google and saving everything up to the cloud where it's safe, you don't have to worry about your documents, and it's doing more and more features, they're slowly eating away at Microsoft's comfort zone as far as being the product to use.
Well, part of the issue, of course, is that you pay for Office 365.
Yeah.
And Google Sheets is free. If you want to, you can pay for the full suite for your company, but it's pretty cheap.
I just found the stupidest thing you have to pay for. You have to pay for it. I was helping a customer this week do a presentation in PowerPoint, and she wanted to put it on YouTube.
Huh?
Export to YouTube, right?
Right. Yeah.
Only if you pay for Office 365.
No.
Not if you've bought the one-time license.
Get out of Dodge.
No.
Yep.
Great.
So what we ended up doing, and she wanted to do narration on it, which makes it even harder. So we did all the narration. Then I had to use QuickTime to capture the screen while it played the presentation. Then I could upload it to YouTube manually.
Wow.
Like I say, they're just, you know, slowly shooting themselves in the other foot.
I tried to talk her, switch over to Keynote, and we could translate her presentation, but that would have taken longer.
Right.
But, so the export to video, with narrations is not available unless you pay the subscription fee.
Wow. That's nuts.
Yep. And I found all those hints. Yeah, just choose the export to video. The command is not there.
In LibreOffice, you can export to Flash.
Well, I wouldn't want to do that either.
Well, no, but you can can upload Flash to YouTube and they'll do
and
the
conversion. Same thing in Apple Keynote, just not in Microsoft PowerPoint, unless you pay the $10 a month or whatever it is.
Wow. All right, listen, that music tells us you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away, because we're going to give you the chance to waste another hour of your life, but only because we love you. Don't get any ideas. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It is Sound Bites. It is the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side. So, really, don't go far. If you're going to go, come back.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. This is nice. Apple, on Thursday, started alerting you if you have old Mac apps hanging around.
Yeah.
If you have, I'm sure you've gotten already 50 or 60 calls about that one. If you have the latest version of Apple's Mac OS software downloaded, you'll get a warning when you open older apps that run on 32-bit technology. Apple has been pushing developers to update their apps to 64 bits. That enables faster apps that can juggle larger amounts of data more efficiently than 32-bit processors common in older computers and mobile devices. Apple's modern underlying technology for its computers, such as its Metal graphics tool, work only with 64-bit apps, and the processors in its Macs have been 64-bit for years. Apple started to move to 64-bit over a decade ago, and its developers conference last year, it warned software makers that Mac OS High Sierra, released in September, would be the last version of the operating system to run 32-bit apps without compromise. The next version of Apple's Mac OS software will still run 32-bits, but it won't necessarily work as the developers intended. As part of that move, those of you who've downloaded Mac OS High Sierra 10.13.4, which was released 2 weeks ago, have started seeing a pop-up whenever you open up a 32-bit app. The alert, which you'll see only once, will tell you that the app is not optimized for your Mac and that it needs to be updated by its developer to improve compatibility. Notice it says, by its developer. You'll be directed to an Apple support page to learn more, which, of course, looks a lot like ads for fake spam ads. So, great. Apple already has made the full transition to 64 bits on the iPhone and iPad. The A7 chip found in 2013's iPhone 5S was the first 64-bit mobile processor on the market, signaled a big step forward for Apple and the entire mobile industry. Over the next 4 years, Apple pushed mobile app makers to move to 64-bit. iOS 11, which Apple released in September, can only run 64-bit apps. Users who still have older 32-bit apps get a notice when they tap on an older app's icon saying it needs to be updated. This app needs to be updated by the developer to work on this version of iOS, it says, and it then gives you the option to delete it or keep it, even though you can't use it. Okay. The Mac alert doesn't work quite the same way. You still have, you'll still be able to use your 32-bit apps, at least for now, and you don't actually have to do anything. The alert is simply simply to let you know that you have old software which won't work on your Mac sometime in the future. It's unclear when those old 32-bit apps will stop working entirely, though. Apple hasn't yet said when it will completely phase out 32-bit app support on Macs. It has told developers that 32-bit apps will still run on High Sierra Successor, which it will unveil at its Worldwide Developer Conference in early June. The company encouraged its users to contact software developers to see if they made 64-bit versions of their apps. As of January, all new apps submitted to Apple's Mac App Store have to be 64-bit, and all submitted app updates have to be 64-bit by June. So have you gotten the warning? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And one of the biggest programs we're seeing in our office is Microsoft Office is not 64-bit.
Oh, don't tell me that.
2008 is not. 2011 is not. A lot of people are still running that. And the first few versions of 2016 were not 64. In 2016,
wow.
They were still making 32-bit apps.
Wow.
So in Office...
Well, many Windows programs are still 32-bit.
Yeah.
Which is why they run so slow, because you got to do that whole
context switching. Yeah. So you need Office 2016 version 25 or later. So the first 24 versions of Office 2016...
Flippin' believable.
Were not 64-bit. And it does imply... that the next version of the OS probably won't support 64-bit apps at all.
32-bit apps.
32-bit apps. So,
right.
So when you upgrade,
wow.
We often see that when people upgrade, especially if they're going from an older computer. 10 years seems to be the typical time we see people upgrading their stuff. And half their programs don't work anymore because they've been replaced 4 times in the last 10 years.
Right.
And then we have to try to go through multiple conversion levels to get them to work right. So the OS upgrade is free, but all the apps you have to purchase now, that can add up to a bit.
That can add up to a bit. Also, please notice that all the error messages or warning messages say that you must contact the developer. Don't call your dealer. They can't help you. They didn't write the apps. You need to make contact with your app developer, which in general you go to the app store, you see their name there, you click on it, it takes you to a place where you can make contact.
And in most cases, it means you're running older software that will not be upgraded. So if you're running Office 2011 or Office 2008, there is no update. You must purchase the new version.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Lee from Hilton, New York. Hi, Lee, what's up?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm good. I'm just calling. When Steve mentioned before the break about PowerPoint not exporting to video,
yeah,
the inside of me panicked. I opened up my version of PowerPoint to find that, yes, I can still create a video with it.
Yeah,
I have the full purchased one. I don't have Office 365.
And right. You have narrations included.
Yes.
Right. It's the people who are not using the full versions who have this problem.
I thought I thought that he said that it was people that you had to use the Office 365 version.
The 2016 version that you pay the $100 a year for.
Right. That's what he's talking about with this other person who isn't using that, is using an older version that doesn't include this.
Okay, because I have just a store bought copy of Office 360, of Office 2016, Office 2016.
Right.
Professional Plus.
Right.
Not the Office 365 version.
You're running Windows, it sounds like, because there is no Professional Plus for Mac.
Yeah, he's talking about a person on the Mac.
This was on the Mac.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and it's the online version, right?
No, I'm just using the regular retail version.
Oh, no, okay.
Yeah.
So, yes, you're fine. Windows is fine.
So and there's a lot of shared code between the programs, so they specifically removed that feature from the Mac version to make you pay extra for it.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. All right, so I have to finally come to the defense of Microsoft buildup.
Right.
That has been cut off.
Yeah. Right.
Well played.
All right, thanks, Lee.
Yeah, okay, have a good day, guys.
Too.
Yep.
Yeah, it's that's interesting. That's interesting that they actually...
Somebody
officially leave it out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Microsoft has mentioned many, many times that they're going to subscription models on everything.
Yeah.
And whatever they can do to make that happen, they will make that happen.
They still allow you to purchase 2016 in a standalone box.
Right.
They've announced that 2019 is coming. They haven't announced if there's going to be a boxed version yet.
Right, right, right.
Now, the other program is QuickBooks. They are going to online only. You cannot buy a boxed version of QuickBooks for Mac. I think they still make the old version for Windows.
Huh.
They're going to online only. And if you don't want to put all your company's accounting data online, then you have to stop using QuickBooks.
Right, right, right. Terrific. Good to know. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Yeah, I tuned in a little late, so I don't know if you've been discussing this or not. But yeah, I run Windows 10, and the last several weeks, several times, the machine, when I go to turn it on, or it's already on, and I just move the mouse and it comes up, it goes through a process of essentially downloading and installing an update to the operating system, I guess. And it's done this, like, at least three times in the past month, and the last time was last week, and it took about an hour or so for it to finish. Is this normal at this point with the operating system, Windows 10?
Well, Windows 10 has had a significant number of updates recently, most of them fairly small, where they updated something and screwed it up and re-updated the thing they'd updated. And
typically, it's only once a month. They're Patch Tuesday, they call it. But there have been more and more out-of-cycle patches released.
Right. Yeah.
When it does do the update, people have work to do.
Mm-hmm.
And
we
have our own schedule, which doesn't necessarily correspond with Microsoft's schedule.
That's exactly right.
I didn't mind it when you could install it at 3 a.m.
Yeah. Right. Now it doesn't.
And fortunately, in my case, it didn't affect anything super critical, but I could easily see an instance where it could be super critical, where I had to do something and it involved a financial matter that had to be dealt with on schedule. And if it wasn't done on schedule, a severe financial loss would be incurred.
Well, let me tell you, people are angry about this and have been for a while. One of the things that people use their machines for, of course, these days is doing 3D printing. And many 3D printers can, you put the printing file on SD card or a flash drive and then put it in the printer. You can also, on many of them, do it over either a wire or wirelessly. And if Windows just decides, I'm going to do an update now while you're in the middle of a print, screws up the print, ruins hours of work.
A great deal of money could be involved.
A great deal of money, and people are very angry. Windows, they're changing that now. They're changing that. What happens on Linux, what happens on a Mac, and what happens on a Chromebook is the updates are downloaded in the background. And then you get a notice that says, we need to update now.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Chromebooks actually update in the background, and all you have to do is reboot, which you can do any time.
It just gives you the notice.
Right, just gives you a notice. And that's the way operating systems have been doing it for modern operating systems. Have been doing it for decades, and in fact, the only operating system that doesn't do it that way is Windows.
So, at this point, Microsoft is into many businesses related to software that don't involve Windows directly. What percentage of their business at this point is Microsoft Windows?
It's minimal.
Yeah.
Minimal. So, in other words, this is really not a high priority for them at this point.
No, it is not. No, it is not. It never has been. And if you are in a business, you can buy
alternatives.
You can buy the ability to, for example, I'm the system administrator.
Yeah.
I can download the updates, test the heck out of them, and then I can push them to my users' machines on my schedule.
But you're a high-powered user, obviously.
Well, but I'm the system administrator for a whole bunch of other people. The individual in their homes do not have that option.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons Microsoft went to monthly updates is so they could be scheduled and all the IT people knew when they were coming.
But when they make something that's so egregiously bad, they have to do what's called an out-of-band update, and there have been several recently.
Yeah.
So at this point, the handwriting for us users, home users, is really the handwriting's on the wall. We need to start migrating to either Linux or Mac or
Chromebook.
It's just some other system.
The reality is you can certainly stay on Windows, but it will cost you money. And it will never be as convenient as Linux or a Chromebook or a Mac, I guess. I mean, they happen in the background, right?
And they'll tell you when they have to restart, and you can say later.
Right.
Older version of Windows, you could turn off automatic updates.
You can turn them off.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying, though, is that would have been an answer. Like you said, you've got a particular job that you've got to run that can't be interrupted.
Right.
My theory would be then go ahead, make sure you turn off automatic updates so it doesn't happen tonight and mess up.
Some programs warn you about that, too.
You know, that you're good
with Windows 10, you can hit postpone a couple of times, but eventually you cannot postpone.
Right.
But it adds one more thing to your schedule of things to keep mind of. You don't want to have to think about this stuff 24/7.
Right.
You want to be able to turn your computer on and rely on it turning on and doing the job.
Right. When I'm sitting at my Linux box, I get a little notice up in the corner that says software updates. Well, if I click on that, then it says you got updates available and I can do what I got to do, or I can just ignore it until I need it. With a Chromebook, all I have to do is shut it down, turn it back on again, and then the updates are there.
Oh, I've been with Microsoft over 35 years. Maybe it's time to move on.
Might be time. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, you 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, members, supported Jazz 9.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Okay.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I was waiting for Al to walk back in.
Dovizinha.
At 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
That is infectious music. You gotta give it that.
Holy moly.
It is?
Yeah, I get infected all the time.
Yeah, right.
Whoops.
We're back, and we have Gerd from Victor, New York on the line. Hi, Gerd, what's up?
I have a HP Pavilion Chromebook, 14-15-inch screen, and it now tells me that it's no longer available for upgrades.
So really?
Yeah. It says, if you see this message, your Chromebook won't be automatically software and security updated anymore. Try one of these options. Get a new one.
Yeah, basically. We've been waiting for that for a while, and I've got to go back. I meant to do this all week, and of course they didn't do it.
What model was it again?
Pavilion. HP Pavilion.
Okay.
Huh.
So I wonder if that's HP or if that's Google.
Well, let's see. I then went to the little thing down below, and I clicked on get more information. And it says older Chromebooks have older hardware parts, and these parts eventually lose the ability to get the latest updates.
Wow, that's interesting.
And if your Chromebook is more than 5 years old, you might see this message. The device will no longer receive software updates. You can continue using your computer, but should consider upgrading.
So that must be the Pavilion Chromebook 14, because it says February 2018 is the auto expiration date.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, maybe. It may be. It is certainly a possibility. They've been talking about that for a long time. They've been talking about the fact that, you know, once a machine gets to be 7 or 8 years old, they're gonna stop necessarily supporting it. And the problem, of course, with very old hardware like that is that it's no longer quite powerful enough to handle the stuff that they've got on the newer machines. So
you just have to stick with the older apps and As long as you can ride those
But then
out.
You stop getting the security updates, too.
Yeah. Well, you, Chromebook, you don't have to worry that much.
Well, it's, it, there are, well, yeah. There, the, there's the fake browser update, fake flash update notices you still get. Chrome has done a lot to protect people from those fake messages and fake update notices.
Right, right, right. But, yeah, there is a... There is a. I got to check mine now. I just updated mine yesterday. I've got a Chromebook. Mine's a, also. Is it a 14 or a 15? It's Chromebook 14, I think. It's Chromebook 14. Yeah, I got till June 2019 on mine.
Next year.
Next year. So yeah, it's clearly they are. They are. Yeah, the Pavilion Chromebook 14 is February.
Yeah, but at least they're being honest up front, letting you know that it. Hey, we're only going to support it this long. Whereas Microsoft, you know, they roll out their software and they'll say, well, it should run.
Yeah, right.
And then well, you do it and your machine gets all messed up.
Let's be honest. It's a seven-year-old laptop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, but I love it.
Yep. Well, I love mine, but now you can buy. The good news is if you do decide to buy another one,
yeah,
get something new first. But once you do that, you have 7 years on that one.
Yeah.
And just all you do is log in with your same username and password, wait a few minutes, and it downloads all your apps, your background.
Really?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. So this happens to me. I have two Chromebooks. I was saying in the first half of the show that one of my Chromebooks died, but I had used the Chromebook recovery utility program, which you can get in the store, and I had made a recovery disk. And when it wouldn't work anymore because something got screwed up, put in the recovery, just said, oh, okay, we'll reformat the hard drive, and we'll pull the recovery on and blah, blah, blah. And it did all of that, and it came up as if it were a brand new Chromebook never used before. That took about 5 minutes. So I logged in, and about 5 minutes later, I had all my apps, my background, everything except what was, you know, what I had downloaded to that hard, to that SSD card. Because obviously the SSD card had a problem. They had to reformat it, right? So I didn't get that back. But that's okay, because everything I used was in the cloud. It didn't matter.
Right.
So, yeah, it took a total of... including reformatting the entire machine, it took a total of about 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, and so that was great. But so if you were to buy a brand new Chromebook today,
right,
and you get, what, 7 years out of it,
right?
You just pop it open, and it says, who are you? And you put in your username, the same username and password that you're using on your current Chromebook.
Okay.
Depending on the speed of your internet connection... About 5 minutes later, you'll see them start to pop up.
Okay.
You know, you'll see the apps across the bottom start to pop up, and you'll see your picture pop up, and you'll see the time set correctly, and you'll then eventually your background will come in, and by that point, it's pretty much done.
Okay.
So it's just, you know, buy it, set it up, leave it for 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
But I want to play with it.
Right, of course. And you can. This will all happen in the background.
Yep.
Okay.
But, you know, I waited because it was fun watching everything just suddenly appear. but you can. So it's not a difficult process. And, of course, Chromebooks are everywhere from, you know, $150 to $1,000. But so wherever you're comfortable in the middle. But honestly, 7 years is a pretty decent amount of time to have a product. I got to admit it.
I agree with you.
Yeah. So it looks like next year I'll be buying a new Chromebook, too.
Looks like this weekend I will be buying. No, I'm going to wait for the ice storm to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, after the ice storm, head out and grab yourself another machine. That'll be probably your best bet.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
By the way, I am a member.
That's what we like to hear, doggone it. Thanks.
Got it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, so my HP Chromebook, my HP Chromebook 14... end of life is June 2019.
Not bad.
This Chromebook, the Toshiba original Chromebook.
Chromebook Nothing
is June 2019.
So I wonder why that one from HP is so much more, you know, sooner.
No, they're both June 2019.
Yeah, yeah. But Gerd's HP was February 2018.
Oh, well, he bought it earlier.
Well, it was. That's no excuse. We had a customer this week bought a new computer, and I didn't pay attention to the size of the drive she had in her old computer, and Apple's been switching everything to SSDs.
Right.
But they're smaller than the HDs used to be. And so I didn't notice she had a 750 gig in her old machine, and the new one only had a 512. She had 700 gigs used.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which is the other problem. That doesn't usually matter much, that the new drives are smaller. 700 gigs used. Turned out to be 300 gigs of photos.
Right.
So we ended up needing to copy it in two stages. So when it starts copying 700 gigs, it gives you an estimate of how long that's going to take. first estimate was...
Go out to dinner and come back.
I think it was 18 hours. No, it's worse than that. It's overnight.
Yeah.
700 gigabytes.
Yeah. Take a nap. Yeah. Wow. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon. I wanted to make a comment about what you were talking about before about the Windows update.
Yeah.
If you go into the settings, you can tell it that you can set active hours and tell it, you know, when you don't want it to reboot. And I've got mine set from like 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. So it never reboots in that window.
Oh, good.
Excellent.
So if you go into the settings and go into the update portion, you can tell it what your active hours are, and you can set up to an 18-hour window.
Yep,
which I think is pretty decent. And
So it's you tell it when you're active, so
yes.
it won't do an update.
Right, but then
so that's opposite of what it used to be.
Yes, force the reboot.
Yeah,
until the time you give it, or a maximum of an 18-hour window.
Right,
that you have set for your active hours.
The problem is you have to remember to leave your machine on. Many people turn their machines off, particularly if it's a laptop. They close it.
Right,
you have to remember. And I know for a while, and I don't know if it's still true, but I know for a while, if you did close the laptop and it didn't do the update, then when you turned it back on again, it would immediately do the update no matter what the hours were.
Right. Or if you just turn it off, as soon as you go to turn it off, it does the update. It won't turn them
off. Yeah, please don't shut down updates.
Right.
But I have to unplug and leave now.
Yeah, too bad for you.
Too bad for you, yeah.
Yeah.
So
that
looks like
so
they...
you've got to the one thing you've got to pay attention to is that the notification will tell you that, you know, it needs to reboot at some point.
Right. It's still not as convenient as it should be, but it's not bad.
Yeah, it's a lot better than it used to be.
Yeah.
It used to be, you know, we're done. We're rebooting.
Yep.
Right.
It looks like
you're done. We're rebooting.
They only added this feature in the anniversary update, you know, at the end of last year. So this is a new feature.
Right. It is.
Right. And like I said, it saved me quite a few times.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm in the middle of burning a video or something.
Yep.
That's the last thing I wanted to do is to reboot.
Yeah. So if you've been running Windows 10, you may not know this feature's in there now. That was added.
Right.
It was on the update list that no one ever reads.
Right, exactly.
I think this came with the first Creators update.
It was the anniversary update it came
with,
it says.
Yes.
So Windows 10 build 1436.
Yep.
If you know what build you're running, no one ever does.
No one ever does, but you can find out. So yeah.
All right,
well, excellent.
I do. I kind
Thank
of
you.
Try to keep track of that stuff.
Sure.
Because the more you know, the more dangerous you are.
Yeah.
The more you know. Right. Exactly. All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
We appreciate it.
Bye bye.
And there is even a custom restart times, so you can set up once during your active hours that, you know, all right, don't restart now at all.
Right. And like you said, that's fairly new.
Yeah.
And it's mainly because people were complaining about the auto update.
Did it happen at you know, like a live news broadcast? We see these all the time. The update notices pop up. Just recently, some big presentation somewhere, was it CES? I forget. Yeah, their Windows automatically rebooted in the middle of their presentation.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Oh, I'm the proverbial bad penny today. I'm turning
up
again.
Oh, you sure are that.
The gentleman who called about the Microsoft Windows updates. I didn't disagree with anything that you said, but the thought occurred to me while I was listening that he needs to check his Windows update screen and see if he's got something that's hanging up. because the prolonged amount of time it was taking to download could be an indication that he's got a failed update, and he needs to go to the knowledge base and figure out what's holding up, see if he can correct it.
And if it keeps doing that on every boot, that's another indication that the update is failing to install.
Right, right.
But, because once it gets one that fails, it hangs on that one and won't bypass it and go to the next one.
Right. He said it happened 3 times in a month, but you're right. I didn't ask him if it was for every time he rebooted in that month.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's just something, you know, hopefully he's listening and he can go check his Windows update and see if he's got a failed one in there. If he does, he can get it fixed.
Yep.
Right. Perfect. Thanks. Thanks, Andy.
No problem.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I did not assume that. I assumed that he had rebooted more than 3 times in the month, but I didn't ask.
And Apple finally released a tech note about too many corpses. A question I said. So there's a subtle bug in system 10.13 that can, during an update, it can sometimes introduce this bug. The user symptom is that the progress bar gets about two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through and stops, and it never completes. So we go to verbose mode and see the messages, and the message is too many corpses being created. And so my first thought was, well, I think one is the number there. One is too many corpses.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So I figured out that when this first started happening, the only fix we could find was erase the hard drive and start over.
Yeah, it's certainly.
Then I found you can just erase the OS and start to not lose the user data.
Right.
Now the tech note tells you specifically what two directories to delete.
There you go.
So you don't have to delete the whole OS. It was an open directory error. And I didn't know where this open directory path was. So now the tech note tells us. And so if your computer is, you know, getting to 3/4 of the way full and stops and never finishes booting, and you have too many corpses, there's now a tech note on how to fix that.
Right. Nice.
It was like the Intel pulled back their Spectre and Meltdown patches for the processors.
Right.
Because of an unexpected number of reboots. And again, one.
One is too many.
One or more is an unexpected number of reboots.
Yep. Yeah. The other thing I really like is how rarely I have to reboot my Linux system.
Yep.
It updates all the time. Every time there's you know, because there's a million programs. I'm running a million programs.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of updates. But I almost never have to reboot because it all happens in the background and it's only when I do the very core operating system stuff that I have to reboot. And on a Chromebook, of course, when I shut it down, if I need a reboot, I can just shut it down. And then the next time I open it up, there it is. It doesn't. Yep. It might take an extra few seconds to boot up, but so what? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm the Steve Ray.
I'm the Steve Ray.
He's the Steve Ray.
The Steve Ray, ladies and gentlemen.
So I was just reading this.
Not the actor Steve Ray, the other Steve Ray.
The other Steve Ray, yeah. One of the commands to delete the cache files, they say to use the move command, not the remove command, because remove is so dangerous, you could destroy your files.
Yes, you can.
An errant space can destroy all the files on the desk.
Yes. You want to be very careful.
Yes.
All right, it's 45 minutes after the hour. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Vivian from Honey Eye, New York. Hi, Vivian. What's up?
Hi. You've helped me before in the past. This is in regard to my iPad 2, and I think the bottom line is it's time for me to get a new iPad. And the reason I'm calling is you were talking about apps, and you had me get the Lookout app a number of months ago for my iPad to protect it. And now when I it wants to update it, and then it tells me unable to purchase Lookout is not compatible with this iPad. And the last update for the software on the iPad, the it would give me is iOS 9.3.5. So I'm thinking bottom line is it's time for a new iPad. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it does sound like it.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, this will probably be the first of many things that aren't going to be compatible. So.
Well, right. Yeah, as we've been saying all day, there comes a point where as much as we love the stuff we've owned for X number of years, there
right.
comes a point where it's time to move on.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that. I just wanted to verify that with people who are a bit more knowledgeable. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. You have a very good day.
You too, Vivian. Nice. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so if you go into your software update and it says there are no software updates, then that's a good clue that you know your device is too old to run the latest version. And on the iOS, it's 11.3 is the current version.
Right.
One of the things we have found in our store, we often will buy back old iPads for resale, but we have found one of the local autism groups. They take the iPads and use them in classes and have a lot of success with children with autism.
Excellent. That's a great thing.
If you have an old device, it's a great, great idea to donate it to a local charity. Here at the radio station, we take radios. The radio donation program, old radios for
people, autism, yeah.
For autism and for people to listen to the radio.
Right.
There's something about, especially autism and Alzheimer's is another one where music kind of helps.
Right.
No one's quite sure why.
I think they prefer gently used.
Yeah. Gently used, yeah. But, you know, you can go to a store and buy a radio for, you know, $5 if you want.
Right. It brings a brand new, unused.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gently brand new radio.
And you're enriching somebody's life, you know, with
it's
music.
It's a beautiful thing to do. Yep.
And, you know, helping them out and all the way around. It's a win-win.
Yep. So, Steve, did you post the Chromebook auto update policy?
Thing. One thing that was interesting with that is it says it's Chromebook Enterprise. So they just told it to the Enterprise people. But it's looks like it counts with any Chromebook, no matter you know, who bought it or where you bought it from.
Right. And there is an update, auto update expiration. It means that product model is considered obsolete. And, you know, it's 7 years. It's 7 years for a device that costs you $150 or $200 or $250, even $350. Mm-hmm. 7 years, that's $50 a year.
Yep.
You know, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, matter of fact, my 15-inch only cost me, it was $260.
Yep. Yeah, it's about what my 15-inch, yeah, 14-inch cost.
Yeah, and to get 7 years worth of life out of it and never have to pay for an operating system or anything else,
yeah. Yeah, you got to buy a new tablet every 7 years. That's not so bad. And again, like we said, you know, you can buy them for as little as $150 and for as much as $1,000, so you can get, you know, whatever price you can afford. I was looking at that that HP Chromebook X2.
Yeah, the X2.
It's only 12.2 inches, which is small.
Mm-hmm.
But it's detachable and it's fast and
that's where they ran into, you know, like you say, it's big for a tablet but small for a laptop.
Yep. And a lot of people talk to us in the store and here in the show, you know, 5, 6, 7 years isn't old.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of is. So, you know, so we always say, you know, like dog years, you know, 7 dog years to a human year, it's probably closer to 10 or 20 for a computer.
Yeah. Right.
So your 5-year-old computer is probably 50, 60, 70 human years old.
Because you got to think about it, folks. This is a very small device and all the heat that it's generating and then it's on for so many hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's a lot. Light bulbs don't last that long, you know? I mean, it's just the way it is, and it's an electronic device. It's going to wear out, and probably by saying it might go longer, but because, you know, they can't predict everything, 7 years is a safe thing for them to say that, you know, you should consider replacing it in 7 years. Because, you know, it's going
to
wear out.
My favorite is you talk to people and they say, well, how long do you expect this to last? Oh, about 3 years. And then 3 years in, you say, how's that machine doing? You ready to replace it? No, I think I get another couple of years out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So then 5 years, you say, ready to replace it yet? No, it's running really well. And then 6 years, you say, how's it running? I got to get a new one. This is junk now.
The other thing.
Okay.
And they're mad at you.
And they're mad at you and me. Yeah.
And the thing that is, though, is, see, you bought that 7 years ago when the technology was hot and it could run all those programs because they were efficient at that point in time.
Right.
Well, you know what? That machine is still the same speed, but yet other software is demanding more, which puts more stress on it, and it can't keep up.
Right.
So, you know, the software is moving forward. Your machine isn't. It might get the updates, but as far as improving the performance and everything else, like it was new, it's just not going to happen five to seven years after that.
Right. Right. Yep. And people do need to understand that the price of poker keeps going up. Computers get faster. Programs get more. We keep asking more of our machine, but we don't want to pay more to use that more. Yeah.
We had a customer last month that was having trouble with their internet and brought the computer to the store. Worked fine. All right.
Yeah.
It's probably your home router. How old is your router? Oh, it's about 10 years old.
Yeah.
Get a new one. Well, no, I'm going to ask a few more people if I should.
Yeah.
Well, remember the ad we used to see on TV? The guy's got a brand new computer in the back of his convertible, and he's going down the street, and there's an advertisement for the newest, latest, greatest thing.
Right. For the X4000 or whatever.
Doesn't have to be that bad, but, yeah. You know, 10 years, that's a long time.
That's a very long time, and I get it. You don't, you know, you buy something, you want it to last. But it's really weird. We spend $30,000 for a car, and if we get 7 years out of it, we think that's great.
Yeah.
We spend $200 for a laptop, we get 7 years out of it, and we think, well, this was junk.
Yeah.
I think our record is pushing 20 years. And just a couple of months ago, I think while I was on vacation, someone brought in the CRT-based iMac that came out in 1998 and replaced it with a new computer. So we had to look up the instructions to remember how to open one of those to get the hard drive out of it because it wouldn't work anymore.
Oops.
And then remembering it's a CRT, so we had to go find our CRT discharge tool and all of that stuff because who knows when it was plugged in. So about 20 years between computers, that's a little too long to wait.
That's a little long. And I've got some old laptops that are like 386s with 512 meg of RAM. Now, frankly, I could put Puppy Linux or Damn Small Linux on them and get some use out of them, but why?
Yeah. Well, then what's also fun on the other side, customers in their 80s come in, this is the last computer I'm ever going to buy. Not necessarily.
That's right.
you've got another 10, 15 years in you, don't you?
Exactly. Pay attention when you buy something. How new is it? When did it come out? Mm-hmm. Because you get about 7 years on a Chromebook, for example. And if you buy 5 years into its life cycle, well, now you got a problem.
And even on the just the storage drive on a computer, Google and Backblaze and a lot of the cloud services companies have put out statistics on hard drives, both spinning hard drives and solid state drives. They have about a 20% per year failure rate.
Right.
And which surprised us on solid state drives because, you know, there's no moving parts. But when you write data to a solid state drive, you're actually burning a little hole in the silicon.
Right.
And they wear out 20% a year. So 5 years, 100% failure rate.
Right. So the mean time between failures is 5 years. That means some last 10 years and some die out of the box.
Yep.
So, you know, where are you on that? All right. We're done. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'll even thank myself, Nick Francesco. We appreciate each and every one of you called in. We appreciate each and every one of you who is listening, including those of you on the podcast, downloading it during the week. Thank you very much. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites. And this is the truly great, and as I keep saying, and it's so true, truly grateful to you that we are member-supported, Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours.